Hello, this is Julie Ann. Welcome to the podcast show, Life with Collective Purpose, about you discovering your higher purpose in life and answering the call for a shared collective healing of the world. Be inspired by our guests that reveal how they made the shift from the individual life purpose to a collective purpose to serve all. If you resonate with the guests of this show, you will be inspired to shift to a life with collective purpose and to answer the call to join our container of bright lights that will shine on the new world. I am a book publisher that has helped over 300 authors to unlock their gift and purpose by sharing their knowledge and wisdom in a book. Many of these thought leaders are now recognizing this transition from the I to the we and their call to be of service. If you need some inspiration to look at your life and understand how you too can make this shift, listen in to our show every week. Join our family as we share our stories and make connections that will help you to live a life with a collective purpose. Hello, 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 Lisa. This is Julie Ann and Life with Collective Purpose. And we have Lisa from Rise Orphanage here. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us a little bit about you, Lisa. How long you've been in Puerto Vallarta? How long you've been involved with Rise Orphanage?
So I have been here since 2018, and my husband and I retired when we were living in Chicago in 2018 and came down to check out Puerto Vallarta. We had some friends that lived here during the season, and we thought we'd check it out. We had visited many times. And when we came for an extended period, 3 months, we wanted to do some good. And we found Rise Children's Shelter as an opportunity to teach toddlers English because we didn't really speak Spanish. So we thought, well, that sounds good. And we went a couple days a week for those 3 months and fell in love with the organization and the children. And from there, we just continued to work there. It ended up developing into a whole lifestyle for us. And now we help manage the organization. We're still volunteers, but we're in charge of fundraising, in charge of the volunteers, in charge of a lot of the operational aspects, the maintenance, and many, many things. And that's our story. We love it. And it's a great place for us. It's our family here in Puerto Vallarta.
When you say it's a lifestyle, I mean, I have seen the amount of work that you and Billy put into that and the amount of passion. And, you know, like you just did a huge fundraiser at the biggest theater in Puerto Vallarta, which seats like 900 people. And just the energy of that event was amazing. Tell us a little bit about that talent show. And now you, it's all over and it's all happened. Tell us.
And I survived. Well, about 3 years ago, my husband participated in What a Drag, which is another large fundraiser for a different organization here in Puerto Vallarta. And it was at the same time we were getting involved, more involved with the fundraising at Rise. And we decided that we need to do something big. And we recognized that Puerto Vallarta is full of great talent. And many of it is from the States and Canada and elsewhere in the world, which is great. But we thought, gosh, there's probably opportunity for local talent to get elevated and at the same time raise money for Rise. So we came up with a version of America's Got Talent here in Puerto Vallarta. So that's how it was born. And it started off with 6 preliminary rounds, and we were taking winners from each preliminary round and moving them to the grand finale. This year, we've decided we're going to take We took two winners from four preliminaries and made the grand finale, which I think is probably the magic number. So we went from six to five to four, and voila, I think it was kind of the perfect show in the grand finale and manageable from our standpoint of having four preliminaries instead of six. So it's super exciting, and we did something different. I don't know what they call it in the fundraising world, but we were fortunate enough to have two people approach us ahead of time and say, if you raise 10,000 pesos, I mean, 10,000 US dollars at the show itself, we will match it. So first it started up, we had to match 10,000. Then it was 20 because we had two people, which we were so grateful for. And we were able to exceed that. And wow, I get emotional thinking about it, because having the community come together to support these children who deserve a fair chance in life is just overwhelming to me. And I'm just so grateful.
And you know, Lisa, I have to say, because I was there and I heard you on the stage when you made that announcement and made a plea to the audience about matching that donation. And, you know, I think every single person in that audience felt your passion, just felt how passionate you were about the kids. You felt so passionate about, you know, everything around you and wanting to help these children. And I think everybody was really, really affected by, you know, you're authentic. You were on the stage, you were just talking from your heart, and everybody could feel it. Everybody could feel your passion, your enthusiasm. And that is what inspired people. I mean, I've been going to a few different fundraising events. That was the piece of magic that nobody else has had in any of those events. Like, you had that magic where you inspired the audience by having that. You were just so real, and, you know, you were just showing your heart, your emotions, and everybody felt it. And I think that's why there were so many people like putting their hands up and pledging money. And I could see, you know, I was just watching it, and I was watching all of the volunteers like running up, you know, taking down the credit numbers. And I'm like, well, this is really effective and very well organized. Wow. I mean, Lisa, really well organized. Like, how did you manage to pull that off? That's like all those people in a theater, all those volunteers. I mean, you know, how do you do that?
Well, it's a lot of work. I mean, honestly, it exhausts us. We do have a good team of people that help us. I, you know, over the years we've learned, like, we need help. Like, there's not enough staff at Teatro Vallarta to do what we need. So we had 28 volunteers on that Sunday night alone to help with everything to make that happen. Because it's a big theater, there's 800 people there. In the past, we've done voting in a different way, where we had to go through the audience and collect votes and count votes. And, you know, we did the same thing with getting money. We had to go through the audience. So twice we had to go through the audience in the past. So we tried to do it differently this year, and it just worked. And we still needed a lot of volunteers to make that happen.
Well, I mean, I was amazed. There were like little bees like buzzing all around the theater. And as arms went up, you know, to pledge money, like, they were literally like little ants, like, in straight away, getting the credit cards. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. But Lisa, going back to my point, it's your passion. It's your passion for this that is, it just rubs off your energy. It just, you know, people want to help you. What do you think it is that makes you so incredibly passionate and so real about helping these children? And like you say, this is your life. For you and Billy, this is your life. Like, how is it that, I mean, to have that amount of energy and that amount of passion, that takes a lot. So what do you think is that secret ingredient?
I tend to be a person that's all in. And I'm either all in or I'm not in. And when I'm all in, I'm all in. And I'm trying to stay composed.
Yeah.
But when you think of these children, they did nothing wrong in their life. They don't even understand what happened to their life. You know, it's been disrupted. They've had some very bad things happen to them before they came from people they trusted and loved. And, you know, I look in their eyes, they're not the easiest kids. I mean, children that have experienced trauma are difficult. They have outbursts, they're, you know, angry, they're upset. But I look at them because they didn't do anything wrong. And I feel I have an opportunity to help them, and I'm going to help them, and I'm going to get the entire PB community that wants to help them to help them. And I won't stop until we do that. And we're doing it. We're making a difference. You know, you come to Rise. I know, Julianne, you've come. The kids are happy. And, you know, most people come to Rise at first and think they're going to see a bunch of kids, you know, discombobulated and unhappy. And you know what? We give them this environment where they learn to trust and love again. And that if we just change one kid's lives, we're happy. But I think we're doing more than that. And, you know, they will remember whether they're at Rise for a few weeks, a few months, a few years. They will always remember their life at Rise because it is, it's a beautiful life that they're having. The staff we have is, you know, we've worked hard to train them and educate them and teach them patience and tolerance. And like that is, it's this is not an easy job for anyone, for the volunteers, for the staff, but it's and finding the right staff is also hard because you have to have the love in your heart to do this job.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I'm just like, you know, what you're doing is, it's so important, Lisa, because, you know, I've just got goosebumps everywhere, learning to love and trust again. You know, we all experience, I mean, every day I experience adults and quite a few in Puerto Vallarta that are still living in trauma because of their traumatic childhoods. You know, that traumatic childhood and some of the things that happened to them as children has stayed with them right into their adulthood, and it's affecting them every single day. And for some people, they don't realize how much it's affecting them. Some people do, and they're spending time in therapy or their own personal development or spiritual development. But what you're doing is you're cutting that at that period of time when children are really influenced, you know, they're influenced by the people around them, their peers. You know, if they're lucky enough not to be an orphan, then, you know, their parents or their extended family. And what you're doing is you're not just giving kids a shelter, you're giving them a home, but you're giving them a home with love, and you're actually parenting them. I mean, you're taking the best version of parenting. And like you say, you're giving them discipline. You're giving them a reward system. That system that you have in place is amazing. Tell us a little bit about that. That is you've got like a reward system to teach kids about discipline.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So as you can imagine, it's difficult in today's world to discipline children because children have rights and, you know, we're not their parents. And, you know, as with all the rules, you know, you can't touch them. You can't, you know, and when you're in a group home, it's hard to give them consequences. So we developed a reward program where for good behavior, they receive a little poker chip, basically, and we call it a ficha. And they put it in a bank. We have like a bank of little slots with their names on them. And every week they have a tiendita, which is a small store that they can buy rewards, use their reward points to buy things. They can buy activities on the computer or in a playroom or on the trampoline or on the bicycles or time with the director or time with our pet therapy dog. Or they can buy toys or clothes that have been donated. So when people give us things, we don't always give it directly to the children. Sometimes it's frustrating for the donors because they want to have the experience of giving the kid a toy. But we explain, we like a reward program so the children can understand how to earn a good toy or how to earn clothing that they want, just like the rest of the world, because we can't just shower them with gifts because we feel bad for them. That's not teaching them anything. In fact, it's setting a really bad precedent for them when they go in the world that people just are going to give them things because that's not how the world works. So we try to teach them this early with this reward program. Along with that comes some math exercises because they have to count the points. They have to figure out how much they have versus how much an item is. And sometimes they have to save their money for a bigger item. So, you know, we try to do a lot with this program. And it works. It really does work.
Well, and I've seen the children, you know, and I've seen the love that you give them too. I can see that they absolutely, you know, love being there. They're happy. You can see, but you're also giving them as normal a life as possible. So they go to a school, they have disciplined hours. Give us an example of a typical day of a child that works in the orphanage.
Okay. So we have children that are under five and that are in a nursery. And those children are in the shelter all day. But we have volunteers that come from 11 to 1:30 and bring them out of the nursery and put them in the playroom. We call it the stimulation room. And we actually teach them English at 2 years old because that's the time where they absorb information. And they're watching videos, they're playing games, they're hearing stories. And then playtime continues after the first half hour of classroom time where they can play, but the volunteers speak to them in English. So they're just continually hearing English during this period of time. Then they go back and then they have lunch and they rest a little. And then we have another set of volunteers that come in the afternoon and play with them, maybe take them downstairs to the trampoline or to the sandbox or to the swing set. We're very fortunate with the donations we get because, you know, people will give us things they don't need anymore and they become jewels for us. For the older children, they get up Monday through Friday and they get up at about 6:30, get ready for school. They eat at about 7:15, all dressed for school. Our nannies put the girls' hair. They look so cute when they leave. They come back a little disheveled in school with recess, but they look cute when they leave. And they get a packed lunch when they go to school. They get breakfast before they go to school. So the driver, we have a driver that drives them to school. The school is in the neighborhood, but for their safety, we don't really walk them because they're under protection. So we drive them to the school and pick them up at 12:30. So they go from 8 to 12:30. They get back, you know, they change their clothes and they have about an hour of kind of relaxed chill time. And then at 2 o'clock, they have comida, which is the main meal for Mexicans here in this country and also for our children. So they have a big meal at that time. And then at 3 o'clock, we start our after school program. So we have an employee that is a teacher and we provide 3 volunteers every day to support her with homework. And we rotate the children in 3 at a time, 4 at a time for those homework sessions. In parallel, we have a literacy program to teach the kids to read and write. And that happens in parallel. So when they finish homework, they go to the literacy program. And then we have a third track Sometimes it's an activity with a volunteer. Sometimes it's time with the psychologist. So from 3 to 6, they are rotating through these various sessions. At 6 o'clock, they start showering and getting ready to calm down for the night. Then they go watch TV, they get a snack, and then they have a small bite to eat around 8 o'clock, and at 9 o'clock they go off to bed. So we keep it very structured because children in general need structure. Children with trauma really need structure because it's predictable. They don't have time to wonder what's going to happen next, and all that, you know, time of anxiety is removed because they know, okay, are we going to do this next? Are we going to do that? You know, they need to control some things, and they can control it with a structured environment.
Wow. It sounds so amazingly organized. Like, how did you learn to do this, Lisa? Like, is this kind of like your background, or like, how did you learn all this knowledge of how to parent children that have had traumatic starts in life? Like, how did you learn all these skills?
You know, that's a great question. My husband and I never had kids. So we have nieces and nephews, but no children of our own. I was a software salesperson, manager, executive my whole career. My husband was in the restaurant business. So it's not our background, but through our experience there and asking questions and working with the other people, and many of our volunteers are professional psychologists that are retired, you know, they educate us as well. And so it's just all been a process, because I tell you, when I first got there, I was like, oh, these kids, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? I've learned patience and tolerance, which is something I really don't have a long fuse for with most things, but I do now with these children and in general with my life. So it's been super interesting. I learned that children with trauma, literally, their brains are affected for their ability to actually learn. So that's why we introduced the literacy program, because here, and I think it happens in the US too, to be honest. So I'm not slamming Mexico education. But let's just say you're an 8-year-old and they're like, oh, you're 8, you go in third grade. I think that's the grade, maybe you're second grade. But right. The age matches the grade, regardless of your background, your aptitude. And many of our children may never have even been in a classroom. So they don't read or write. So they're sitting in these classrooms like, I have no idea what's happening. And then they get homework and they're supposed to do homework and they don't even know what is happening. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to teach them in our own method just to learn to read and write. Even if they're in fifth grade, they might be at a second grade reading level. Right. So, you know, we're teaching them and getting them interested. Before, you couldn't get them interested in a book at all. Well, now that they read at a level they're able to read at, they're, you know, they're not embarrassed. They're able to keep advancing. So anyway, we're like, and again, it's all of the volunteers that come together and help. Right now in the high season, I have 65 volunteers, you know, doing maintenance, doing homework, doing, you know, teaching them to read and write, to be with the nursery kids, come in the afternoon. Like, it takes a lot. We have 16 staff members, but it takes a lot to make all the other stuff really happen.
Wow. But I mean, okay. Wow. You've never had children of your own. That's got to be one of the most amazing stories. I've also never had children of my own. And I always say that, you know, as women, we are natural born mothers, right? That we have the instincts to nurture and to be a mother. And I actually, interestingly enough, I think it was around about 45 that I said, oh, I think I could actually parent now. I think I know enough about life to actually be a parent. And it's almost like you're at that same kind of thing happened to you, that you're like, oh, now I can actually do a good job of this.
Yeah, now I know enough, right? Well, now the other thing, I am one of these people, like, I never planned my life. Like many people, I'm going to do this and I'm going to go to college and I'm going to be this. And I like, not me. I mean, my whole life has, I call myself the accidental executive when I was having my career, because when I was in high school, I had a job at a bank and my dad was like, oh, honey, you don't need to go to college because you can be a bank teller. And that's a great career. And I was like, oh, maybe. Well, then summer came before, you know, after I graduated from high school. And I was like, all my friends were going to college. And I was like, well, I think I want to go to college, like a month before college started. So I went to college and I thought I was going to be an accountant. I don't even know why I thought that. And I got a D in accounting 101. So I'm like, that's probably not the best career for me. And I ended up, you know, majoring in business and having, you know, a good experience at school. And I remember one of my teachers saying, how many of you think you're going to pursue your career? And it was in my IT class, like computer programming class. And I was like, I'm going to get married. I want to just have kids and dress them cute when dad comes home. You know, literally, that's what I'm thinking. Well, I end up majoring in, management information technology, becoming a programmer, moving to California, then getting into software sales, software, you know, and it was in the 80s when software was just booming and everything was changing in technology. And I was fortunate to be successful doing that as a programmer, then a technical support person, then a salesperson, then a sales manager, then a VP of sales and marketing. And like, it just, I never planned any of it. It just all happened. You know, I guess I'm more opportunistic. And I feel like that's the story that, you know, brought me here. People are like, well, did you plan to go work at an orphanage? I'm like, not really. We came down here, thought, well, we'll teach English a couple days a week. Well, COVID happened here. And my husband and I had actually moved here. So we were like the only people still in Puerto Vallarta when COVID happened.
Right.
So we said, we can't leave those kids. Nobody's there.
Right.
And that's how we got more and more and more involved with the organization, because nobody was here and I couldn't leave the kids. I'm like, people were like, oh, you can't go there. Oh, you, I'm like, but they're kids. Like, they don't understand COVID. They don't understand why nobody's here anymore.
Right.
And like, I'm not going to just disappear from their lives. Even though we went in like smocks and face shields oh my God, we look like aliens.
Honestly, I love what you're saying, because, you know, it sounds like your whole life, you've just lived this authentic, real life. You haven't been influenced by people saying you should do this or you should do that, or you have to have this to have a status. You've just lived this very real, authentic life, to the point then you have been given this opportunity where you can see that you can give back and that you can help. And then you've used all of these amazing business skills and organization skills that you've learned throughout your life now at Rise to actually help run the operation, the volunteers, and, you know, and truly parent from that place of helping children actually feel like they've got a home, not just that they have a shelter, but they actually have a home. They have a home where they're loved and they're learning discipline and they're learning the value of things. And what do you do when you have real problem children that come in and, you know, they've had a very traumatic experience, they don't trust anybody, they're scared, you know, how do you help those children?
Well, it's all a process. They have to go through, you know, a lot of anger and fighting and tears, and we just do our best to work with them. One of my mantras, and I say it in English to them, they know enough English, like no matter what is happening and they're screaming and hitting and breaking everything in the house, which we repair a lot from anger outbursts. And I just say, I love you no matter what. I love you no matter what. I'm really sorry you feel this way, but I love you. And that, oddly enough, they know what it means, calms them down. And, you know, you just have to keep, and the whole staff is like that. Like, you know, we don't say you're bad, you're bad, you're bad. You know, you had a bad behavior, but you're a good kid. We love you. We know. I mean, and it may take years. I mean, it does sometimes take years for these children to calm down and get comfortable. But you can't stop trying. You have to, like, I mean, of course we all joke like, oh, so-and-so, oh, it's your turn with him, you know. But, you know, it's just, you know, we still love them. And, you know, we just have to pace ourselves with each of the children that are more difficult.
And what happens to the children? How long are they there? Do they go on to be adopted, or like what is the future of children that are in Rice Orphanage?
So I'll talk about two things, because that we talk about, you know, what's the future, but we haven't talked about how they come to us. So they come to us through DEEF, which is the equivalent of like a child protective services here in Mexico. And the family or the child has been reported to the government as being in an unsafe or neglective environment, or they might be eating on the streets. So the government gets involved and investigates and brings the children to us when they feel they're not in a safe place. So we're actually a service arm to the government.
Wow.
You know, but they bring us to children and we get no funding from them, which is why we do all this fundraising. And the children will stay with us. Most, you know, stay with us for years, you know, at least a year or 2 years or 5 years. Some have been there 10 years. And when they leave, right now, when a child reaches adolescence, like maybe 11 or 12, we work with the government and they move them to an adolescent home. DEEF actually owns a adolescent home called Nueva Vida. And the boys, when they age out at Rice, go there, which is kind of cool because many of our kids that left Rice are there. So when they get there, they know who's there. It's not a whole new group of kids. And similar for the females, they go to a place called Maximo Cornejo. And that's another shelter here in Vallarta. They have children of all ages, but mostly the older girls are there. So that's what happens. But some get adopted. I won't say many, some. And that is dependent on what has been arranged with the family. Because if all the members of the family, and I mean like not just mom and dad, but mom, dad, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, grandparents, if they all agree that nobody is going to care for this child, then they can be adopted. But right. That's the process. That's why many are with us for a year or two at a minimum, because that process is quite a process. And if one of them take the children, then it might have taken a year or two to have that happen, right? Also, if they decide they don't, then an adoption process starts, which actually here in Mexico starts with fostering. So sometimes our children will leave to a foster home, which is intended to be a long-term adoption, and it doesn't work out. Mm. And sometimes those children come back to Rice. Sometimes they go to another shelter in Guadalajara or here in Vallarta. So it's really hard for these kids. I don't like them to leave. I like to know they're going somewhere that they're going to stay, because I mean, these kids just don't need more drama in their life and more trauma and more rejection. Yeah. You know, if we just keep them, they know we love them. And like, sometimes I'm just like, that's easiest.
Yes.
You know, we had a young girl leave. She hadn't been with us a long time, but her grandmother called and said, wow, I didn't know how much you taught these kids. And how, I think she probably was trying to say, if I knew that, I would have left her there. But anyway, she didn't say that. But she was surprised at how much her granddaughter now knew and learned, and how much she missed being at Rice. Because they call and they're like, Can we see everybody? Because she loved that living there. It was a great experience for her.
Wow.
And so, you know, that's what we want to hear. You know, I want them to be happy when they, you know, leave, but I also want them to have really positive memories of their experience in life at Rise.
Wow. And do they come back, Lisa? Do they come back and visit, like, you know, as they're adults, do they come back and visit you or get involved, or does that happen?
Yes. Yeah, so this is crazy. For me, I'll tell you my first experience. It was the first year we were doing the talent show. So 3 years ago. And I was sitting at that cigar bar, you know, coffee shop down on Insurgentes, and I was working on the ticket. So the ticket had our logo on it, Rise. And the girl waiting on me says, "Hey, Rise Children's Shelter." And she says, "I grew up there." And I just started crying because it was literally the first adult I had met that grew up at Rise. And here she was, my server, speaking English, you know, as it's her second language. But I just was like, oh my God, these kids can end up okay, wow. Right? I mean, and so there she is. And since then, I've met others in the community. There's a gal that works at Casita and Gardens, and actually a young man that works there that also grew up at Rise. And so I see them, I invite them back to Rise, but some, you know, one, the folks at Casita and Gardens, they came, was their first time to come back. I showed them pictures of, you know, we had from their youth. I've had some people just knock at the door and they'd say, "I lived here, can we come in?" I'm like, absolutely.
Wow.
And we literally have two employees that have been there almost the full 23 years. And so they remember these children. Wow. And it's just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful because they're all living good lives. They're, you know, out in the community, whether here or Guadalajara. But yeah, I can't say they all are because I don't know where all of them are. But yes. I know we have, you know, a child that grew up at Rise that works in the hotel industry. She was at like Hyatt Ziva, you know, but running the children's program. So like, it can, you know, it can happen and it can be positive. And I love when, you know, my husband has a lot of logos on his t-shirts because, you know, he runs around with the truck and picks up donations. So he wants people to know he's from Rise. So sometimes, as I said, we'll be out, you know, another place we were at in Versailles, the guy waiting on us said, "Hey, I lived at Rise." And, you know, like, I love that. It's yes. just such the reward for us.
Oh, wow. Lisa, this is so beautiful. Thank you so much. More people need to know about what you're doing. More people need to know about Rise Orphanage. How do they get hold of you? How do they find out more about Rise Orphanage?
Okay. I think the easiest way is to go to risepv.com.
Okay.
And you can send a message from there. You can also write lisa@risepv.com. That will be an email to me. Those are the easiest ways. You can learn a lot from our website. You can make donations. I do want to make one comment because I know everybody's like, "Wow, you raised so much money at that talent show." And we did. We raised $80,000 wow. in that one fell swoop. That's a long time in the making to do that. I know it was like, in 10 minutes, you did that. I'm like, well, sort of.
sort of. I mean, 10 minutes and 6 months preparation.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, sort of. It takes a lot of work to get there. But the other thing is, 80,000, we are grateful. I'm not complaining. But it takes $200,000 to operate the organization.
Yeah.
And the biggest cost is the staff. And if anybody knows what's been happening in Puerto Vallarta, the cost of living is going up.
Yes.
You know, you no longer can pay your staff, you know, 100 pesos a day or, you yeah. know, $10 a day. You can't. One, I won't have any staff because they can go work everywhere else for a lot more.
Yeah.
So we've had to increase that. In the past, you know, we were run by nuns, and many people did this, you know, as charitable work. and didn't mind not being paid competitive rates. But it's not the world we live in anymore, because those people need to pay their bills.
Yes.
And they can't pay their bills if they don't make money.
Yes.
So we had to increase the pay for the employees. As I mentioned, we have 16. That's not a lot of employees to, right. You know, it's a 24/7 organization, right? You need night nannies, you need morning nannies, you need afternoon nannies. You know, it takes a lot. And then there's Social Security is something we added last year, which is about 40% of their salary. So,
wow.
You know, yeah. The cost to run the place are high. But if you think, okay, we've got 18 kids right now, you know, to raise 18 kids on 200,000 US, I think we're doing a pretty good job.
Yes.
You know, we're talking medical, we're talking about, you know, dental. We have a great donor for dental that helps us keep our kids with braces and when needed. But, you know, it still all adds up. All
yes.
of that adds up. And I welcome anyone. We just finished the budget and all the last year's expenses, and I'm going to put it on our website. So if anybody has questions of where our money goes and how it goes, please, you know, feel free to contact me or take a look.
Beautiful. Lisa, thank you so much. We're going to put this on Vortex TV. We're going to put it on our podcast, Life with Collective Purpose. It will be on our website, houseofinfluence.mx. And we're going to get the word out to as many people as possible that please come and help risepv.com and connect with Lisa on lisa@risepv.com and come and join in with the love. Thank you for everything that you do, Lisa.
And if anybody knows people that are looking for work, we need a driver, we need a psychologist, we need a nanny and an assistant. So come on, you can get paid for that job too.
There we go. Call out for help. And I've got some people I'm going to connect you with as well, Lisa. So
thank you
so much. Thank you.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Bye now.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this adventure. If you're ready to step into your higher collective purpose in life, head over to www.influencepublishing.com and claim your free 2-hour webinar on unlocking your story and discover a family of support and love to help you embrace the collective call to purpose. Please go to iTunes to like, subscribe, and review so we can spread this message. You can also find us on YouTube and Facebook. Please share this episode with someone you think can benefit and have a positive impact on their life. Until the next time, live a life with collective purpose.